Well, I wanted to plunge us right into his world, and I thought that those legends, those early legends that hung around for 1,500 years of Jesus having these supernatural powers when he was a child, had a lot of truth to them, you know, that we were dealing with Jesus who was God and who knew everything, but obviously did not want to know everything at every minute because he wanted to have some sort of human experience with us. And there is enough evidence in the scripture to indicate that Jesus didn't know everything every minute, that I could choose a scene like that and use it to show how he was becoming aware of his immense power and his unique qualities, and yet was a child, a real child.
Throughout the book, you have these series of events where Jesus has these things happen, or these things happen when he heals Cleopas, and then when he sees the angels, where he seems to be this child who is struggling to figure out just exactly who he is. Was that really important for you to profile that struggle?
Yes, yes. I mean, I was committed from the beginning to writing about the Jesus of the Gospels, the Jesus I believed in. And that meant the Son of the Virgin Mary, the Son of God, God himself, and the Jesus who was visited by shepherds and magi. It meant the whole package. And I didn't want to in any way contradict the Gospels, but I wanted to find a way as a fiction writer to create a probable reality for Jesus day in and day out.
Now, the book is titled Christ the Lord Out of Egypt, and it starts off with his family leaving Alexandria to return to Palestine. And they're returning right after Herod's death, and Palestine's in rife with revolts, and they actually see a massacre in the temple in Jerusalem.
That's right.
And he's a very young, 7-year-old boy. I mean, what was your thinking when you decided to write this book about sending Jesus back to Palestine at this time when the country was really torn apart by all these revolts?
Well, I think it was very much part of what was going on then. And even if Jesus had not come back at that very time, he still would have seen this type of thing in the next ensuing years. They continued to have a lot of civil unrest. They continued to have the Romans coming in to establish order. They continued to have trouble with the family of Herod Archelaus. And with Herod Archelaus himself and with other claimants to the throne. It was never easy. It was a time of unrest. And I spent a lot of time reading history and studying Josephus and reading whatever I could about the period to determine what it would have been like for Jesus. And I'm convinced he would have seen a great many violent and ugly things. And he would have lived with a certain instability in the country because that's what the country was going through.
You mentioned that you were writing the Christ of the Gospels, but at the same time, the Jesus that you create is very young and he's very human. He's a child who is dealing with all of these things, not only his own supernatural powers that he's beginning to see, but also his family leaving Egypt. And, mm-hmm. and then, again, the struggle of his people in Palestine that he's witnessing firsthand.
Right.
When you sat down to write this, how difficult was it for you to find a voice for Jesus as a child that you felt was authentic and was real and still stayed true to the gospel?
Well, I had to plunge. I had to put myself in his place and try to think and feel and talk like a child of 7. And I did a great deal of studying of scripture, of the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, to try to understand what type of vocabulary he might have had, because he was an Aramaic speaker and a Greek speaker. We have overwhelming evidence that he probably almost certainly spoke both languages. Almost anybody did at that time. And so I had to come up with exactly the right tone and exactly the right level for him. And it was difficult, but it was also instinctive. You know, two books that I've studied all my life are David Copperfield and Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. And both of those books begin with a very young child telling you how he feels and how he sees the world. And I use those as my study guides, kind of, to try to do this.
Now, in the author's notes at the back of the book, you talk about your own struggle with faith, about how you left Catholicism when you were still quite young and
right.
then were an atheist for a long time and then came back to the faith.
Right.
And you came back to Catholicism not long before you started writing these books. What was it like for you to, as you're renewing your faith, begin searching for the historical Jesus?
Well, it was a very harrowing experience in some ways, because a great deal of the research on the historical Jesus, quote unquote, is negative, skeptical, cynical research that basically says he wasn't the Son of God. He's a stumble bum who got crucified by accident. And I was afraid of that scholarship in a way. I was afraid that it was going to have a great deal of convincing material on its side, and that it was going to be difficult for me, and that I might have to leave my brain at the door, so to speak, as I persevered with my view of Jesus as God. But I found quite the opposite. I found the scholarship wasn't all that convincing, that it's basically biased scholarship, and it's scholarship that simply has, like all biased scholarship, one particular point of view that it wants to advance. And it is not really scientific, and it's not really objective, and it's not really very solid. This is not to say that somebody doesn't have a right to come along and say, well, I don't want to believe Scripture as it is. I'd like some historical proof. But the truth is, there's no proof that Jesus wasn't what he said he was. I know that may sound tricky, but there really isn't any proof. I mean, the best testimony we have on Jesus in history is the four Gospels. And there isn't anything really to support the contentions of a lot of modern scholars that Jesus didn't found Christianity and that he'd be horrified if he knew what had happened. I mean, these are suppositions. Those are assumptions. And when people build books totally based on assumption and speculation, it can be a very hollow exercise.
But I think a lot of people who are the skeptics would say the same thing about the Gospels, that we really can't be certain of their authorship besides the fact that the Gospels say they're authored by who they say they are.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that...
That's true.
That, I mean, either side is going to see holes. Maybe were you just reading what you wanted to read in the scholarship because you had renewed your faith?
I found scholars like N.T. Wright, the Bishop of Durham, and Martin Hengel to be much more convincing and interesting when they made cases that the Gospels were what they seemed to be. And we do take an enormous amount of history on the basis of first-person testimony that's been handed down to us, and there's a lot of testimony for Jesus compared, say, to Augustus Caesar. I mean, we have a lot more that we can read about him. We have Paul's letters, which are quite incredible and early and filled with the personality of Paul, and they say a great deal about Jesus and the people who followed him. And I had to read all of that, even though I was writing the life of Christ. I had to go after and read Paul and reread all his epistles, and I had to study the historians of the period to find out what the period was like. And I ultimately found that the church fathers, their tradition about where the Gospels came from, was as valid as anything I read by the skeptics, more valid, more convincing.
You're probably best known for the Vampire Chronicles, you know, the stories mm-hmm. of Lestat and Louis and Armand. And I wonder if, as you sat down to write this book, which is, some people will say a departure, others will argue that it's not, but still it's another kind mm-hmm. of look at spirituality. Were you worried at all about alienating your fan base, the people who had stuck with you through the Vampire Chronicles and all of your novels?
Not really. I really wasn't. I mean, I knew it might happen, but the thing that my readers have always valued in me is that I write what I really believe in writing at the time, that I pour everything that I know into the book I'm writing at the moment. And I had to do what I had to do. I experienced a personal conversion. I also addressed an enormous amount of research and came to certain conclusions. And I had to go ahead and write this book about Jesus exactly the way I perceive things to be. And I know that's what a lot of my readers really want. They want whatever it is that I want to give them with an entire heart and mind. They don't want me to just keep manufacturing books for them that conform to older patterns. Some of them may want that, but they're not the main readership. And also, a lot of the readers of the vampire novels and the Mayfair family novels, they know that they were about a spiritual quest, and they know that Louis and Armand and Lestat, these characters were tormented by conscience. The whole vampire mythos has to do with lost souls, people searching for meaning, people searching for God, people hungering, quite literally, for life itself and for something that transcends life. And when you see the books in that way, when you see their spiritual essence and their power in that way, it's not a very big step to jump to Jesus Christ himself. I mean, I underwent the conversion and the salvation that basically all of my characters really want.
Now, I was going to mention that because your books are dealing with vampires, and these, a lot of your books do, and they're these people who seem to be searching for a higher purpose to their lives and their existence. Even though they're immortal, they still need to find something to live for higher than themselves. Mm-hmm. I wonder if looking back now, if you look back at the series and the arc of those novels, if you see a parallel to maybe your own kind of searches and questioning about spirituality.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's all a record of a journey that I made from early childhood really on. I mean, Interview with the Vampire is about the grief of somebody not only who has lost a child, but the grief of someone who's lost a faith, a religion, a whole view of the universe which has meaning.
Your last book in the series was Blood Canticle, and you've said that you're done. You're done writing about vampires.
Absolutely.
Was it hard for you when you were finishing that novel to close the door on that chapter of your life?
Oh, definitely. Because I loved the vampire Lestat. I mean, that character was me. That was me questing and trying to be strong and trying to not to collapse in fear and trembling, but to go forward in life. And I hated to leave him, but that novel is all about his refusing any longer to be himself. His saying that in the face of pure love, the recognition of what pure love can be, he doesn't want to be the bully and the predator any longer and the glamour boy of the vampire world. And he falls in love in that novel with the whole idea of this small community at Blackwood Farm where people really love each other. And it was a great pleasure to write that. And I did feel very bad when I left him.
This first book, Christ the Lord Out of Egypt, just deals with Jesus as a 7-year-old. There are plans to do more books.
Oh, definitely. The second book is like a torrent in my head right now. I can't wait to. I want to go to Israel for about 7 days and walk in Nazareth and Jerusalem. And then I want to come home and go right to work on the second book. And the way it looks now, I think it's going to be 3 or 4 books to do the whole life of Jesus up through the ascension into heaven.